Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Ugin, your host, coming your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We do stream live during the radio broadcast at richarddugin.com, and we archive the podcasts at richarddugin.com, the radio shows page, as well as on SoundCloud and iTunes and anywhere else that somebody is downloading the files and posting them on their website. Our guests do that pretty regularly, and we're greatly appreciative of that, as well as the links that they provide to the program and what we're all about. You might even go to our missions page and find out what we're all about, because I think it will help you to understand why we're here and why we're doing what we're doing. Today, we are, this program, the slogan, the phrase, it's in my head now, and I have to use it, Denise. This program's going to the dogs, isn't it? Welcome to the program, Denise Monge. You have an interesting, very interesting job, if you will. Actually, probably it's more appropriate to say vocation than job.
I would say that. Yeah, life mission for sure.
Yeah, and it's something that a lot of us, we feel as though, yeah, I'm pretty savvy. I know what the heck's going on, and I can pretty much deal with pretty much anything that comes along when it comes to my pet. Now, letting our listeners know that if they want more information, they can go to petprana.com. That's petprana.com. Find out more about both Denise as well as the work that she does. You're not only certified in training, which I kind of wish I'd had you around a couple of years ago when we had a problem with one of our dogs and a foster that we had. He did not like her for love or money, and we had numerous trainers come over to the house to try to work to bring these two dogs together. It wasn't happening. It even got to the point where, I shared this with you, it got to the point where I was out there with our dog, Angus, who is over 100 pounds. He's a big black King Shepherd, and Bridget, who is a purebred Shepherd. And he was so upset at one point, he actually grabbed my arm by his mouth and held on. But he did not bite down. He just held on. And I knew enough. Two things. Do not pull your arm out of his mouth, for one. And number two, he's doing it because he's upset. So hold on to him. And I literally had him in a barrel hug, if you will. Not a bear hug, a barrel. Because he's like a barrel, and until he released. And I wasn't upset with him in the least. I wasn't upset with either of them. Is it true that in some instances, some animals, some dogs in this case, because that's what we're talking about, they just don't cohabitate together?
Absolutely. You know, I think just like humans, dogs have those people who are just their nemesis, and they just don't get along with, and there's something kind of up between their dynamic. And a lot of times I talk to the pet parent, and I say, how do you feel about, you know, that human or the animal? Like, do you pick up any weird vibes? Because sometimes it's something more general in that way, and sometimes it's something more between the specific dynamic between the two dogs. But what's really interesting as you speak about Angus and Bridget, first of all, beautiful names. I mean, I feel like I'm in this like Celtic romance novel when I hear those names together. They're beautiful. But what we can glean from an energetic standpoint is there might be something going on between the male-female dynamic, even within us, because we all have aspects of the divine masculine and the divine feminine within ourselves. Right? The divine masculine within ourselves helps get things done, helps create platforms in order for projects to launch, helps kind of keep those trains running, whereas the female aspect within all of us is more of that intuitive, creative muse, the nurturing mother. So there may be something going on even internally within the humans where the divine masculine internally is having a little bit of struggle with the divine feminine.
Now, that's interesting because, we actually tried working in that direction, and my wife and I talked about it and tried to understand what was going on. Now, from the moment that she brought Bridget into our household, I was not a happy camper, primarily because First of all, she hadn't consulted me. She was supposed to take pictures of the dog and then distribute the pictures to find a home. But instead of taking pictures, she took the dog. And the reason why I was concerned and not a real happy camper was because I knew enough, and she's been dealing with dogs all her life. She had a pack of four Siberian Huskies. She and her ex-husband used to run them. She understood that whole dynamic. But for some reason in this situation, that dynamic escaped her. And that is that you cannot bring, and in this case, dogs, canines, you cannot bring a foreign element into territory of another without risking some kind of conflict. And there, because you from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but the best way to handle that is you want to bring the two dogs, in this case two dogs, together in a neutral setting so that they are not protecting their territory and can get to know one another and then see where that dynamic is. Is that the way it's traditionally done?
That's absolutely right. From a traditional training standpoint, we definitely want to ensure that we're setting everyone up for success. We're helping everyone be comfortable with the new addition to the pack, whether it's another dog, another, you know, human baby coming into the family, whatever it might be. So the first step there, and this might sound a little hokey, but most scientists will acknowledge that dogs have the cognitive abilities of a human 2-year-old child. So even before anything happens, I like to sit down and talk to the dog and just explain, listen, Angus, we have a new lady coming into our home. She needs a home. She needs us to be welcoming and tolerant of her. We know it's a new addition to the family. It's a change in your routine. But, you know, we're going to help you through this. And then you introduce them, like you said, in a very traditional or a very neutral territory, rather. So they can get to know each other. You might even bring home, you know, a blanket that Bridget has been sleeping on and let Angus smell it first before he even meets her, right? Because with dogs and any animal companion, for that matter, it's important that we introduce new elements slowly but surely. And then how interesting, you know, as you describe the situation, it's really kind of mirroring that, you know, the masculine aspect, that really rational, practical concerns that you had of, you know, this just is an irrational, practical approach. Yet there goes the divine feminine being very, you know, they can be slightly impulsive. So it's, you know, there's so many layers to that dynamic. It's fascinating.
Well, and I have to say that I had to be very careful the way I approached it because, first of all, my wife is an empath and picks up on everybody else's energy. And also very intuitive. And so, and she's also a very sensitive individual just by virtue of those first two items. Mm-hmm. So I had to approach it very delicately, very gently, but I know I had to get the point across. And I, quite honestly, we had a dynamic going on for 15 months that I started to get very wary about. I'm thinking, how much longer? But I had to let her make that decision. And finally, she came to the realization, we can't do this anymore. We have to find a home for Bridget. And we did. We found a great, great home up in Northern California where we saw some videos of her where she was just running and playing and have a great time with all the other dogs that were with her, which reinforced my feeling and, of course, my wife's feeling that Angus didn't want to have anybody else in the pack. Now, I do have another dog. She's a 16-and-a-half-year-old Shepherd Husky mix. She's all white. And she raised Angus. All right. He was 8 weeks old when we got him on Valentine's Day, 2013. And so he tolerates her. But now she's in a situation where she can't walk. I have to help her around now. I'm looking for a wheelchair to allow her to move around because her front legs are still working just fine. It's just she doesn't have the strength or stability in her hind legs. It's the usual thing with shepherds in particular, but obviously other dogs. And so when he walks past her, she barks at him. And it took me a few minutes to figure out why she keeps doing that. And it dawned on me. It's because he's up above her, and regardless of the fact that she raised him, it's another dog, it's literally, and he's over her, so she feels that threat, just as a canine. It's like instinctual, right?
It is. You know, I mean, there's definitely canine dynamics, and we're at a very interesting point in dog training and working and connecting with our animal companions, where we still have a little bit of that old school dog training mentality. There's still a little bit of that patriarchy, right? That dominance, if it's not you, it's me, that kind of some zero mentality of, you know, only one of us wins. We're starting to transition, and I'm seeing it with the animal companions as well, into a more collaborative way forward. So that's where in traditional dog training, we're moving more towards positive reinforcement training, more about let's collaborate and find the most harmonious routine for everyone in the family, for the dogs, the humans, and the dogs are following suit. So it's interesting to see that there's still a little bit of that dynamic that even if you look at the world stage, it's playing out, right? It's that death rattle of the, you know, masculine versus the feminine, or that hierarchy, you know, only one can be the leader. We're moving away from that slowly but surely, but we still see a little bit of that in the dog training, which is interesting.
I know that we're going to talk about a whole lot of other things here on the program, but I know that you have a lot of different modalities that you utilize in your training practices and in what you do with dogs. And you focus exclusively with dogs, with canines?
So from a traditional training standpoint, yes, I do positive reinforcement with dogs, but the energetic aspect of the work that I do with animal companions spans across dogs, cats, horses, birds. We've even worked with hermit crabs, if you'll believe it.
Oh, that's great. I like that. That's very good.
But, you know, one more thing, kind of speaking about different modalities, you know, I do bring a lot of modalities into the work that I do, and one of them is pet numerology. And what's interesting is I just pulled the numerology behind Angus's name.
Oh.
And his name comes to an 8, which is a beautiful leader. So he definitely is the guy who wants to be in charge. He wants to be the leader. He wants to kind of forge the path.
He's the protector.
Exactly. He's very benevolent and loving, but he's definitely in charge. So
yeah.
The name definitely tracks with the behavior, which is interesting.
So would I be able to make this assessment that the day that it is Makushala's time to go, because I know it seems like it's getting close, but she still has an unbelievable amount of energy in her. That he isn't really going to have that much of a problem with her not being there. I know he'll mourn at some level, but because of his personality, he's sort of waiting for that. It's not that he wants her to go, but when she does go, he's going to be okay with that for the most part.
I think he's definitely a sensitive dog to change from what you've told me. But with that 8, he does have the tendency to be the one who kind of holds things together for people. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that he's actually going to be very helpful to your wife. You know, your wife being sensitive, being an empath, that might be very tough for her. And I think that you might find the two of them coming together and him comforting her. And in having the job of comforting her, it helps comfort Angus, if that makes any sense, because everybody's playing a role in the dynamic.
Oh no, makes perfect sense. It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone through the loss of pets over the years. A lot of people, that's the reason why they don't want to have animals in their lives, because they know that there is going to come that day. It may be 10 or 15 or 20 years, depending upon the animal. But it's coming, and if I get close to this animal and I embrace and it becomes an integral part of my life, and then they go, oh, I don't know if I can handle that. And it's like, well, I mean, I try to put a somewhat humorous and positive spin on it, saying, well, I realize that it's going to be hard, but it is the last part, and that's usually the shortest. But then again, everybody's mourning period is different. And I think that from your perspective, would you try to counsel people to say, look, it's possible that they may come back to you in another form, that they're not really gone?
Absolutely. So as I work with dogs and their humans, of course I do traditional obedience training, but I also look at the energetic bond between the pet and the human, because the animal companions mirror so much of the bigger energetic patterns going on in our lives. And so when we are losing our animal companion, or we know they'll be transitioning, or even if it was sudden, we feel that loss deeply, right? Because arguably, our animal companions are one of the most intimate relationships in our lives. They know us at our most vulnerable point. They know us at our most joyous point. You know, we really open up to them when we might be a little more protected around other humans. So that is definitely a tremendous loss. I have found in my work, because I do animal communication and intuitive readings for animals, I have found a lot of animal companions do come back. You know, that whole premise of a dog's purpose, where the dog reincarnates over and over.
That was a great film. Great
fantastic.
Film.
Fantastic. And, you know, when they come back, they might not always come back as the same animal. They might see a dog in one life and come back as a cat in another, and a bird in another one. Mm. But what's the most interesting part about that is during this lifetime together, you do share that intimate relationship. So you learn to recognize your animal companion's energy. So that once they've transitioned, how many pet parents say, oh my gosh, you know, I know they're not here, but I just felt them. I swear I felt them in the room, or I swear I heard the little clinking of their collar. And that is absolutely them. They do come back, they check in, and they drop those energetic cues that they're there, so that you remember their energy, remember their presence, so that if they do come back to you, you recognize it.
Yeah. Years ago, when we were living back in Phoenix, we had a lovebird, and we named him Merlin. And we had, at that time, the four Siberian Huskies, the pack. And we have these two French doors that we always keep them locked because the dogs stay outside and, you know, so forth. Well, one evening we come home from, I don't know where we were, a movie or something, and the French doors were wide open. And
wow.
The inside of the house was, to say the least, tossed, including the bird cage that held Merlin. And the cage was open and Merlin was gone. We did see a few feathers here and there, and we actually thought that he was gone and passing through one of the Siberians.
Mm.
About the next Thanksgiving, we were having Thanksgiving dinner outdoors, and we were sitting there enjoying the meal and the group that was with us. And all of a sudden, my wife looked up on the telephone pole and the wire, and she recognized Merlin. He was there.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting about that is that a year or two later, there was a cat that was meandering around our neighborhood, a female cat. And she was supposedly owned by one of the neighbors, but she was hanging around us, and she was pregnant. So we took her in, put her in the garage, set up a space for her. She gave birth to four kittens, three of which we gave away. And by the way, the mother's name was Little Bit, because she was a small little kitten. And the fourth kitten that we kept, we named Merlin, and he looked like a Mancoon. And the reason why this story, I'll cut to the end of it, because this is where it's very interesting. He passed away a year ago, April 15th, and he passed away in my wife's arms. But before he did, my wife, who she has her own stethoscope, and she thought he was gone. So she gets her stethoscope and she checks. His heart isn't beating. She can't hear a thing, right?
Mm.
And of course, she begins to she really gets into the emotion at that point. The next thing you know, he wakes up.
Wow.
He wakes up. And so then we had him probably for another, I'm going to say 8 to 12 hours. And then he finally did leave. He departed. And I took him and I laid him in a small cardboard lid with a towel. I put him on the dining room table to allow the other cats that we had to, in essence, pay their respects. And I told my wife, I said, he was definitely Merlin because he performed his best disappearing act by leaving and then coming back.
Wow. So, I have chills. And what's really neat is I just pulled the numerology on Merlin, and it's also an 8.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, and in numerology, when we look at the 8, it also, if you look at it on its side, it's the infinity symbol.
Yes.
So 8 is about being in that divine flow, you know, the trust that that everyone's going to be together again, that as above, so below. So you have a lot of this trust and transition, all these lessons around eight steps going on. And what's really interesting about that is eight is associated with the first chakra. And the first chakra is all about that sense of grounding and tethering to the earth. And the pet behavior that I've mapped against the first chakra is on-leash reactivity, which is when, you know, dogs are barking or they're a little more territorial or resource guarding, and that's what Angus is kind of displaying.
Yeah.
So I would say you've got a lot of exciting lessons going on as humans in the family around eight, infinity, abundance, and groundedness.
Well, I do have
so that's really neat.
Yeah, I do have to say that, you know, those are wonderful attributes, but as a pet owner yourself, you certainly can appreciate sometimes how strenuous it is to be a caregiver to an animal who is going through this process. And we've had, we had another cat, a beautiful, beautiful, fluffy cat. We called him Mella, which is Gaelic for honey. He and his brother were found in a dumpster in Phoenix in June when it was 110. And we came across these folks who had found them because we were going to the Humane Society to get a cat, and we decided to take these two. Well, Mella reached his time to go, and my wife was holding on to him and just caressing him and, you know, letting him know, hey, it's okay, you can go anytime. But he was making these growling sounds. Now, from my perspective, I was getting a little concerned because I was afraid that he was going to, you know, this last gasp of, I don't want to really go, and start scratching and clawing and all that kind of stuff. And of course, that wasn't the case at all. And she actually felt him pass through her, which was, she said, was an extraordinary feeling. She did not get the same sensation when Merlin passed. At one point, we actually had eight cats. We are now down to five. It's just really been an extraordinary period. And I didn't have a lot of animals when I was a kid growing up. I mean, yeah, hamsters. My sister had a few parakeets, you know, and that kind of thing. We did have a cat for a short time. It was a calico cat whose name was Calico. It just made it easy to name the cat. Just call it what it is. And at one point there was a German Shepherd, but we only had it for a day or two until I guess the Humane Society or somebody came to claim him. But I didn't have, and my folks didn't really want to have, well, you figure you got six kids. Well, you need animals too? I don't think so. It's just an extraordinary experience. I want to talk when we get back from the break about some of the modalities. You've already mentioned one, and that is healing with chakras. And that to me is fascinating from the standpoint of dealing with the aspect of animals and their chakras. So we're going to talk about that when we return here. Tell me your story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, along with Denise Manja, and she is with petprana.com. We will be linked to her website as well. Again, that's petprana.com. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. There's more to come.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And welcome back to Tell Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Duke, your host. Thanks so much for staying with us. Denise Manja and I are talking about, of course, we're talking about my menagerie, but this could apply to just about anybody's. It's funny, too. We now have chickens, five of them. And actually, we got them a year ago this month, the month of July 2018. We got them in July of 2017, immediately following a fire where we were, for the first time in 11 years, we were evacuated from our home.
Wow.
We named them all Irish names. We have Bridget and Mella and, oh my goodness, Deirdre and Luna. I don't know that that's so much Irish. And my goodness, I can't Morgaine.
And it's like the Oscars, right? When you're doing the acceptance.
Yes, I'd like to thank. Mother and I do have a mother and father. I'd like to thank mom. You get real nervous. But anyway, so we have, and then just the other day, we were out. My wife loves feeding the blue jays that we have. We've even had, when we first moved there, the blue jays would actually come and land on your hand.
Wow.
They would land on her hand. I had it happen to me too, but she feeds them peanuts each day. She puts them out on a birdhouse that we've put up for them. And there was this crow And we've seen this crow a number of times. So my wife says, you know, I think we have a pet crow. He's going to be a wild pet crow. We aren't going to be able to cage him, but he's going to hang around. So she gave him a name. We call him Warren. And we started to just talking about this. And the next thing you know, my wife's going, you know, that'll make a neat children's story. And don't you think that that's true, that a lot of the stories about our animals would probably make great children's stories?
Absolutely. And that's because children are so in tune with nature and the magic of animals. You know, crows symbolize magic.
Oh,
so I love that he was bringing that presence to your magical land. And it just sounds like a Disney fairy tale where you live. I want to come visit.
The only thing we don't have is Tinkerbell floating around spreading the fairy dust.
Maybe
we do. I was just going to say, just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not happening. But you have a number of different modalities. You've already mentioned one in particular, and obviously you do the traditional dog training. Speaking of which, and I want to get into the chakra aspects as well, but
yeah.
In terms of dog training, and as I mentioned before, we had a number of trainers come to the house to help try to bring Angus and Bridget together at one point, and it was all for naught. He was not going to have it. But we came across what I thought was a great training device, and it was actually a collar. Now, I used it more with my dog, Makushla, to help her to stop pulling when I would take her for a walk, and it actually worked. And it is not an abusive type of collar. It's a full circle that you put around the dog's neck, and only half of the circle has these little barbs on it, but they're not pointed.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes over the top of the neck, not underneath. And it's supposed to simulate a mama disciplining babies. And that's what she would do, is she would grab them around the scruff of the neck on the backside, little pressure to say, hey, knock it off, you know, behave. And all you do with this particular collar, you keep the collar loose and you keep the leash loose. And all you do whenever she starts to pull, you just do a little flick of the collar. And it causes the collar to cinch ever so slightly, give that little pinch, and then release.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts in regards to the types of training devices that are out there that people seem to think work, that really, quite honestly, are doing more harm than they are good for the animal, as well as the dynamic between the owner and the animal?
Absolutely. So one thing that I do as I work with, you know, pet parents and their animal companions is I change the vocabulary, right? Because I'm very big into creating energetic shifts where dog training becomes more collaborative versus dominance-based as it's been in the past. So for me, I say pet or animal companion, furry friend, and then for the pet parent, for the what we traditionally call the owner, I typically say pet parent or pet guardian. So as I go through my explanation, I just want to make that clear so people know what I'm the terminology that I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, you know, it's very intentional. It's a small energetic shift that we can make that really helps honor and, you know, speak to the sentient little beings that our animal companions are. So with traditional obedience training, there's so many different philosophies out there and so many different tools and techniques. And, you know, I try very deliberately to come from a place of no judgment, right? Pet parents are doing the best they can by their fur babies. You know, that's just the nature of it. They don't want to hurt their animal companions. They don't want to cause harm. They want to help the situation. And so I like to work with pet parents given whatever tools they're using, right? I personally am not a fan of the prong collars or anything that pinches or prods or, you know, sprays citronella. The reason for that is we always want to identify the root cause of the pulling. Is it a lack of focus? Is it that they have a lot of energy? Is it that we're not giving them enough mental stimulation? Have we not set proper expectations about what needs to go on during a walk? When I work with animal companions who pull a lot or are unfocused, I like to get them jobs to do during the walk and make it more fun for them, playing games like Hustle Steady, where I change my my pace. I go really fast, and then I randomly slow down, randomly change directions. That helps me become more relevant than anything they're pulling towards. And in doing that, we're also learning to read each other's body language and respect each other's body language. So I find that to be a different technique, which I enjoy, pet parents enjoy. You know, I work with a lot of female pet parents, And a lot of women, they just don't feel they have either the strength to hold back their dog or, you know, there are certain tools they're not comfortable with. So finding that way that we can work collaboratively where everyone's making good choices on the walk feels like more of the authentic leadership that my my clients are looking for.
I'm feeling bad now because I was using that collar.
No, but that's exactly what I don't want to do. Yeah. I don't want anyone to feel bad, you know, because we're all making the best decision we can at the time, and different things work for different people.
Well, the one thing that I felt good about was the fact that it seemed to me anyway, that A, it worked, but B, but it wasn't hurting her, at least as far as I could tell. She has very thick fur. And I remember when the woman who was assisting me in trying to help her in that area suggested this collar and put it on her. I mean, it was almost immediate that she automatically stopped pulling. And this was even before she did any kind of correction, you know, in that regard. So it was I'm going, wow, you just put that on her and now she's staying right with you. It's wow. Okay.
I like that. And if it works for your dynamic, that's great. Yeah. And then other, you know, some animal companions are a lot more sensitive.
Yeah. But I never want to administer any kind of, pain. I can't believe anybody would even think that that was a way to train a dog, because now you're setting up a dynamic, almost a dynamic of fear.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, we all do the best we can with the information at hand. And we've been so fortunate that in literally the past, I want to say like 10, 15, maybe 20 years, things have shifted dramatically in how we work with animal companions. But before that, you know, every pet parent had, you know, that mentality of if your dog has an accident, roll up the newspaper and, you know, hit them on the nose. My mom had that growing up. So it's just a symptom of the times, but now we have more options. And I think that's what's so cool about the age of information, and we can access more philosophies on the internet. You know, raising a dog or working with a dog or any animal companion, it's just like raising a child. There's going to be a lot of philosophies out there, and it's your job as a pet parent to kind of filter it through and find what works for you and your animal companion, because it's a unique situation. And I always say to pet parents, trust your mommy or daddy gut. I want to empower pet parents to trust their instincts, because I may be an expert in dogs, but you're an expert in your fur friend. That's kind of my philosophy.
And I think, too, that's one of the other things that I learned in doing some reading, especially whenever there was any kind of misbehaving or as I, again, as the human interprets it, misbehaving. But I remember reading and even talking with other guests on this program about animals, that it is our job as the human to understand why, as you aptly put earlier, why he or she is doing what they're doing. They're doing it for a reason. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is not something that they decided, I'm just going to start doing this. You know, they tore up this, or they're spinning in the yard chasing their tail, or they're chasing this or that or the other. There's a reason they're doing it.
Absolutely.
And you have to, we're the ones who have to figure out what that is, the reason why, and then determine whether or not it's something that we want to correct or to shift focus away from that so that they will hopefully stop doing it out of habit. Angus, for example, he gets frustrated if I don't go out every single night. And unfortunately, due to the weather conditions here, it gets a little warm and I don't want to hurt myself or him as far as the heat's concerned. He wants to chase tennis balls. And if I don't do that, I'll let him outside. And I'll say, go potty. And he'll go out. And if I don't go out with him, he starts spinning. He starts chasing his tail. Now, why is he doing that? Gee, maybe it's because he's frustrated because he's not getting what he wants, that he's not doing the job that we're doing before, because that's how I look at it. But someone also said to me, there's another reason why he's out there chasing those tennis balls, and it isn't for him. It's for you, so that you'll get out there and get some exercise too.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it shifts your focus. I think what you said is absolutely a brilliant point to expound upon. You know, animal companions, in order to understand the motivation behind their behavior, we have to understand the why. We have to put ourselves in their shoes. And we love our animal companions, so we will willingly put ourselves in their shoes, try to understand things from their point of view, try to understand their motivations. What a great dress rehearsal so that we learn to get into that habit of seeing things through other people's eyes as we look at our world more broadly, you know, different cultures that we might not understand or different people's actions. What a wonderful gift they're giving us, teaching us to put ourselves in other people's shoes and see things from their perspective before we react.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And it's astounding what we can learn in that regard. And it also, again, as you say, it shifts our perspective to be more understanding, even if we haven't figured it out yet, even if we don't know why that person reacted to me the way that they did because of some past event that took place, some other trauma, et cetera, even if I don't know any of that, at least now I can say, okay, they reacted, but it wasn't to me. It was to something else. So now, A, I don't have to take it personally and then start that whole energetic downslide. And B, I can be more sympathetic and even empathetic to them and maybe give them the opportunity to work through that. Not that I become suddenly a therapist or facilitator, but a friend who says, hey, I understand that there's something else going on here, you know, and I'd like to give you the opportunity, if you'd like, to, you know, work through it or talk about it or something, you know, so that we can get back on the right foot. And I've done the same thing with my wife when, you know, I'm very much aware of certain things that trigger certain emotions in her that I don't want to go down that road. So I'm going to be more cognizant of the way in which I express myself about a particular subject, but I still am able to speak freely. But, and this is the thing that is interesting that you've kind of opened the door on in terms of our current uncivil behavior, if you will, not just in this country, but around the world. It's been going on more so now in the last few years where, you know, we can't even talk to one another because we've taken on these particular positions about particular things. You know, if you bring it up and you talk the wrong way, oh man, you get screamed at, yelled at, slapped, shot, run over by a car. I mean, And it's you know, they talk about how the lack of civility in our ability to live in society today, in our civilization. Okay. There's no civility in our civilization.
Yeah, and I think it's all coming to a boiling point. You know, we're seeing this, and a lot of us are standing up and saying, you know, that's not how we want to be perceived. That's not how we want to live our life. So we're creating a new way forward. Yeah. You know, more of that collaboration and coming from a place of understanding. And our animal companions are great examples of that, aren't they?
They are indeed. And also, a lot of people, they think that when you try to be more sensitive, more understanding, more tactful, that people are telling you that you can't speak your mind, that you don't have freedom of speech. And I'm sitting here going, you can say whatever you want, but wouldn't it be a lot better if you said what you really meant in such a way that it didn't throw gasoline on the fire, but allowed the other person to actually hear what you're saying, what you really mean, rather than inflaming the dynamic to where they're never going to hear you because you've set them off? Well, you know, it's like, what's to me, using tact doesn't mean you can't say what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I know that's tough for a lot of folks because they think I should be able to say whatever. We've heard all kinds of people say whatever they want, but it isn't really what they mean. But they just manage to inflame the situation. Ergo, we have this uncivil civilization.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, finding your voice is so important. And it's something that I know the animal companions have taught me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a slight kind of unassuming woman. You know, I'm not, I don't have an imposing personality. And they've really taught me how to find my voice and my authenticity and speak my truth. And when I thought of, you know, speaking my truth and standing up for my beliefs, I always thought of that very militant way to do things, you know, and to me, I thought in polarities is either I'm meek or I'm militant. And what they taught me, the animal companions, is that there's a whole spectrum in between and you find your voice. So I speak up on behalf of the animals and the animal companions about, you know, the gifts they're bringing up and the respect they deserve, but I do so in a compassionate, loving voice. I don't want to make anyone wrong in the process. I'm just speaking my truth.
Yeah.
And so that's what our animal companions, especially dogs, really help us do as well, is find that authentic voice, that authentic leadership. They give us the reminder that sometimes a whisper is stronger than yelling, right? Because my dog's reacting, and I'm like, Angus, Angus, stop. Sometimes you're saying, Angus, settle. That's a very different energy, right?
Yeah.
It's very authentic. I'm telling what to do, but I'm very calm and contained. And I think that's another lesson that we're learning from the animal companions on a daily basis.
Well, my wife hasn't had to do it that much recently, but it used to be where, yeah, I would actually, I'd get frustrated with Angus because he was sitting there ringing the bell, so to speak, that we have this large ring on a chain that is bolted to the wall right next to the doorknob of the door that goes outside. Now, this is a primitive form of lock, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does when he wants to go outside, he goes over there, hits it with his nose to let us know, hey, I want to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, but you were just out there 5 minutes ago. What's going on here? And so, you know, Angus, stop it. You know, come lie down, lie down, you know, and so forth. And I finally realized that, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and let him out each time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if he's going to go out there and get frustrated and spin, I'm going to let him do that because mm-hmm. I can't stop him from doing that other than going out there and throwing tennis balls. And it's like, it's 11 o'clock at night and, you know, I'm exhausted and so on and so forth. And who knows, maybe I have to acquiesce and say, all right, I'll throw a few for you. Because they have no sense of time. So if I throw mm-hmm. one or 101, he's not going to really know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I've actually tempered my my verbiage towards him energetically, not so much my discipline. But, you know, we let him know when, you know, he's crossed the line, you know.
Absolutely,
you know.
Yeah. And that's what traditional dog training, you know, like whether it's positive reinforcement or any other techniques, you know, just the traditional teaching boundaries, you know, helping them understand what's expected of them. Dog training is kind of left off at the mental stimulation, right? If we think about, you know, we were talking about motivation. Every human is motivated to reach self-actualization, right? But in order to get there, their basic needs have to be met. They have to have, you know, food, water, air, you know, all that good stuff. Then once that's fulfilled, then we move on to the next level that humans need. They need a career. They want to feel respected. They want to have heroes. And only then, they want intimacy, right? You want intimacy of a relationship, of family. Only then do you have your needs met and experience to go into more spiritual, esoteric concerns. You know, who am I? What's my role in the universe? How can I be a better person? So I would argue that dogs have those same motivations, right? So traditional dog training has, you know, definitely worked with making sure that their basic needs are met. Of course, you know, we make sure they have food, water, you know, all that good stuff. But then by giving them, you know, jobs to do through commands, we're helping build that esteem that they need to feel good about themselves, right? When they know what a sit is, they know how to play the game, they know how to fetch the ball that you're throwing, and they feel good when they do that.
Mm.
What you are hitting upon is what I propose in my philosophy of working with animal companions is, so traditional training has met the physical needs, the mental connection, but we haven't really fully addressed the energetic connection. And that's what so many pet parents are starting to understand, that, you know, whether they're trying to stop the barking or pulling on leash, of course traditional training is important, but we have to look at the energy behind it. How do we feel when our dog pulls on leash? Do we feel it's an affront to ourselves? How does it feel when our dog is barking at us for attention? Do we feel like they take us for granted? And if so, where else in our life do we feel those same patterns? Because in my experience, animal companions start calling out these bigger energies in our lives that are ready to be examined.
Mm.
So if my dog is barking at me to go out incessantly and I'm trying to get out, you know, the book I'm writing on or, you know, writing the outline for my next show, I might feel undervalued. Like, listen, I have things to do as well. I have value to bring to the table. And once you start identifying what it is you're feeling, what's that vibration, what is that frustration, you might realize, oh my gosh, that's the same frustration I feel when I'm in a meeting with my boss and I say something and it's a great idea and someone echoes it 2 seconds later and the boss goes with that person. Wow, what a great idea that is. You know, why didn't they hear me say it? Oh my gosh, it's that same frustration. So what we find is when we work with our animal companions in traditional training, we actually learn to manage our energy, identify our energy so that we can shift it in larger areas of our lives as well, not only with our animal companions.
Mm. Well, you've already talked about one modality, well, two in particular. We're going to dive into one of these right now. But one of them you talked about was numerology. You also deal with sacred geometry, animal symbolism, crystals, as well as chakras. And I'm actually going to throw this out to you if you have a chance to even take a look at this, just because you sort of did that with his name. He was born on the 22nd of December 2012. Which I find interesting because of the whole Mayan calendar thing.
Mm-hmm. The December 22nd, 2012.
Which is actually the day after our wedding anniversary.
Wow.
Back in 2002. I also want to get into the whole aspect of chakras. Now, It is possible for us to identify the similar locations in a canine as in a human, where the seven main chakras reside. Is it basically the same in a canine?
Mm-hmm. So just like we have seven major chakras, and of course we have so many more, the seven major chakras are each linked with different universal themes, like the first chakra is linked with I am, and its themes around grounding, security, safety, your connection to the earth and your reality. In our dogs, they have the same seven major chakras. They link up pretty consistently physically on the body as with the humans, mm-hmm. and the energetic themes are the same. So they really can help act as mirrors. Our chakras mirror theirs, and theirs mirror ours, because our energy is so incredibly interconnected.
Mm. I remember reading a book called Joy's Way that talked about all of the other chakra centers throughout the body, mm-hmm. the joints in the elbows, the knees, then the fingers, and so on and so forth, and then other even smaller points in that regard. And I just found that all so fascinating. And then, of course, it made me start to think about the solar system and the planets, and they have their own gravitational pull and this and that and the other, and the spinning and the... And I'm thinking, okay, there's got to be a connection in that regard because, you know, as above, so below, the macro to the micro, that kind of thing.
And, you know, interestingly enough, the world has seven major chakras as well. The first chakra is actually right here in California in Mount Shasta. So, you know, what I love about the chakra system is that it gives you a really systematic way to look at your pet's behaviors, but also look at energetic themes in your life, right? Because sometimes, you know, as people who are spiritual or we are looking at self-improvement and growth, as we all do, you know, sometimes we're like, okay, but where do I start? I feel frustration, I feel anger, but I don't know where it is or what's going on. So that's where nature can act as a catalyst, right? If we see a lot of numbers are associated with chakras. If we see a lot of colors throughout our day, colors are associated with chakras. Mm-hmm. But what I've done is I've linked pet behaviors. The seven main pet behaviors, I linked them to each of the seven chakras. That way, if your dog is having separation anxiety, for example, mm-hmm. that has to do with the second chakra. That has to do with issues of the mythic separation. It has to do with energetic matters of creation, guilt, abundance, you know, desire, how your needs and desires figure into the bigger picture with everyone else's. Were you told that your needs and desires are not as important or that you should be ashamed of them, that you're selfish if you act upon them? So when we do deal with traditional dog training aspects of separation anxiety, I also work with the pet parents on their second chakra and themes that might be going on there.
Mm.
And, you know, to your point, what we're doing is we're just taking a holistic approach to the pet's behavior.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes traditional training doesn't cut it. We might do everything right, but there's just that little bit there that still isn't, you know, getting the animal companion over the hump. Once we look at the energy and we approach dog behavior through the lens of mind, body, and our energetic connection, it just helps really address address the root issue.
Yeah. I know that Makushla has that situation where she has that separation anxiety. I can leave the room. Mm-hmm. And she'll spin around on her spot in the middle of the room to be able to see around the corner into the kitchen to see where I am or to see me as soon as I'm coming back. Okay. She does the same thing. For example, I have to come down to the radio station in the evenings to do to produce certain sporting events, where you know I throw the commercials in between the play-by-play by the announcer at the venue. And my wife says, "Oh yeah, she's spun around in that same spot ever since you left, and is just waiting." Mm-hmm. Now, if the two of us leave the room, my wife and I both leave the room, say we want to go out and sit out in the chicken run with the chickens, which is a whole nother experience in and of itself, she will do the same thing, only after a period of, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, we can start hear her, we'll hear her, she's upset. We can tell that she's upset. She starts to fuss and to whine and some little barks and so forth and so on. Whereas when we leave her at home during the day, when we go to work, we put her and Angus out in the backyard where it's safe, where she's familiar and so forth, not a sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how she has that reaction inside versus outside.
And yeah, I think we touched upon this when we initially spoke. And what's so fascinating about that is when she does those little circles, and Makushla is the one with the rear leg issues, right?
Correct, uh-huh.
Yeah. So anything having to do with the rear legs or the hind chop, that has to do with the first chakra, issues of grounding and feeling tethered to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So when Makushla is in the apartment, she's doing those circles, she's actually grounding herself.
Oh.
She's bringing her energy down. She's tethering it down to the earth to feel safe. The reason why she does better when you leave and she's outdoors is she's more connected to the ground and the earth.
Oh,
so
that's
it's easier
right.
for her to ground.
Yeah.
And our animal companions are great at reminding us that all of us need to do grounding, whether it's walking barefoot on the grass, you know, once a day, or just picturing an energetic column of light coming through you and into the center of the earth and kind of clicking into Mother Earth's wisdom. We all need to feel grounded in order to feel safe and connected.
Yeah.
Because if we're not grounded and the energy of the first chakra is blocked, it might affect the higher chakras,
yeah.
right? Because it's just like a fire hose. If,
yeah.
You know, if one's blocked, the water can't get through.
Right, right. By the way, there was an interesting technique I learned, and this goes back probably 15, 16 years. We had to put Makushla and one of the other dogs in the garage during the day, and I can't even remember why we were doing that, but we were, you know, made sure they had food and they had water and everything, and they would just get so upset. And we found out about this technique that I didn't really think at the time necessarily that it was really going to have much success, but I was certainly willing to give it a try. I found an audio file online of what was claimed to be, and it sounded like it, dogs laughing. So I looped it and then burned it to a CD, and we put that CD on loop and played it for them in the garage while we were gone, and it actually worked. It calmed
yeah.
them down.
And music soothes the beast, right?
Yeah.
The reason there's that saying. So, you know, there's a couple things that go on when we use tools like that, which I'm a huge fan of music for mm-hmm. animal companions. One is it helped relax you because it was giving you something to do. So you put it in, you're like, okay, I've done my part. It's a change in the routine. Maybe there's a different outcome that you can expect. So your energy probably was a little calmed by the fact that now you have a tool that you're going to utilize.
Mm-hmm.
And then background music is fantastic to just, you know, drown out any noise that might, you know, get them on high alert so they can kind of relax. It's how some people like that sports on the background as they fall asleep. But I love that you chose something, you know, a lot of people like to put news on in the background. And I say the energy behind the headlines are just too stressful for animals to take on.
Yeah.
It might create more anxiety, you know, than anything. The other choice people like to put is classical music.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that the crescendos and, you know, those sudden loud sounds can really startle dogs if they finally relax a little bit. My favorite music to leave with an animal companion is Reiki music. Because what it is, it's like fa-like sounds, but they have different vibrations because each chakra carries a different donor vibration, if you will.
Maybe like the music of Stephen Halpern.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So basically you have this beautiful fa-like music that has these healing vibrations entombed in it. So it's almost like your dog's getting an energetic spa treatment as they're relaxing and hanging out.
Oh, yeah.
I love using music as a tool to help soothe and calm pups.
Yeah. I was surprised because I hadn't really thought about it, mm-hmm. but it was like, oh, I'm so glad there's something, at least something we can try. I don't know if it's going to work, but, you know, we've tried other things that haven't worked. And this was coming from a different source. And the fact that someone had actually recorded dogs laughing, I'm going, really? Wow, that's who's to say? I mean, matter of fact, I have some video of when Angus, who was 8 weeks old, and Makushla, who was training him and raising him and so forth, when they were in the backyard rolling around in the tall green grass, when they were playing, it was the same kinds of sounds. I hadn't even connected them until then. They're having a great time, even though she's there as the alpha to discipline if necessary, but she's also there to play and have some fun. And I know she was because, you know, that's what she's wanted to do. And it's just been quite an experience in that regard to learn these kinds of things. And even listening to Angus, for example, and the different tones of barks that he emanates. The lower the tone, the more the protector is engaged. And the higher the tone, the more play he wants. Or even if it's a real high tone, usually he's out there in the backyard spinning and barking, saying, will you please come out here and play with me?
I love that you're so engaged with all your animal companions and you're, you know, interpreting his behavior and his barks and his tones. Mm-hmm. And that's just so beautiful to see. What a beautiful bond.
Yeah, we're trying. And I have to say that I don't have all the answers by any means. But, you know, I figure the more we do and the more we work with them and so forth, the better we understand them. The one of the most beautiful things about Angus that I have found, and this is a big dog, when I was in high school, actually grade school, eighth grade, and I was delivering the local morning paper back in Phoenix and bicycling everywhere, I used to get chased by these big black dogs.
Mm.
And at the time, this is just, again, at the time, not knowing, I actually I created a solution in a spray bottle of maybe one part ammonia to maybe 5 or 6 or 7 parts water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out all I needed really was the water in terms of spraying them because it would distract them and I would be able to get away. Well, with Angus, this is a huge dog. And I shared with you that one example of when he clamped down on my arm.
Right.
And I wasn't afraid of him. And maybe it was because I had learned enough at that point to realize that he's not attacking me. I just happened to be there, you know.
Right.
And I was also trying to protect Bridget as well because I didn't want him to hurt her and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in spite of my experiences with these big black dogs chasing me on my bicycle as a kid, you know, we have this huge black dog. And he sounds, when he barks in that protective mode, I don't think you'd want to come in. You know, you, Denise, you probably, no problem. No problem.
For sure.
Yeah.
I know when they mean business and I respect it.
Yeah.
But how wonderful, you know, as pet parents, we do become observers. We observe their behavior. And as we become more better observers of our animal companions, we open ourselves to be bigger observers of the world around us, right? So we start noticing more energetic clues. And what's so beautiful about the fact that you chose to bring a big black dog into your life, whether it was subconscious or not, is you changed the narrative. Because as we start observing bigger patterns in our lives, we start saying, wow, they're all leading to that same story. You know, whether it's the story that I'm the victim or I don't have control of what's going on in my life or I'm never heard. if you start noticing those patterns, you're able to say, wait a minute, I'm a co-creator in my life. Let me change that story. You know what? I speak my truth and it is received. And all of a sudden, the energy follows when we set that intent. So I love that Angus came as this dog who he's so powerful and strong, but you found a way to work together, collaborate, and have a loving relationship that you didn't get the chance to have with the dogs in Phoenix.
Yeah. And it's again, it's been extraordinary. And I know you know as well as I do. I hear this from a lot of folks, some trainers, as a matter of fact, and so forth. People who are supposedly experienced in animals, and having them as pets, you do not want to treat them as your children.
No,
they're animals. Right. You know. Now, right. My first wife had guide dogs, and I was trained in how I was to be around this dog. I was told when it was appropriate to pet it and to have fun with it. And I was also told when I was to stand back and allow the dog to work. And I respected that. I respected her working with the dog. I have to tell you that there were a lot of times when I was watching her work with the dog, I would have tears in my eyes because that's such – service animals are such an incredible, incredible – blessing to the people who have them, whether it's for the blindness or whatever other issues. I just find that just extraordinary. And it's not just dogs anymore either.
Right. It's all sorts of animals. And I'm blessed in that my family, my uncle suffers from PTSD. He's, you know, a veteran, and he has a wonderful service dog. He's changed his life tremendously.
Oh, wow.
And I think that speaks to the point that, you know, of course animals are part of our soul family and we love them and we're compassionate to them and we want the best for them as we would any member of our family, but we don't want to be patronizing to them because our animal companions do come here with their own, you know, missions and jobs, whether it's, you know, actual jobs as in becoming a service dog, or their job might be simply teaching us a few lessons in our life.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really what I'm passionate about as we move forward in our relationship with animal companions is honoring all the animals for the beautiful, sentient, and wise little souls that they are, yeah. Whether it's a caterpillar, a hermit crab, or a huge old dog like Angus.
Yeah.
Everybody has a message, a story, and some wisdom to impart.
I know we're running out of time here, but I have to ask you this about the four questions that can help call in more harmony, balance, and expansion in our lives with our pets as well as our relationships at large.
Right. So we touched upon this a little bit, but I'm glad that we're able to kind of synthesize this. My philosophy in working with animal companions is that they serve as mirrors to bigger energetic patterns in our lives. So when we are working with our dog or living with our dog and they're nipping at us or they're jumping up at us or they're reactive to guests, right? They're barking at guests who come in, they're a little territorial. Whatever behavior you're not loving, I always say when you think of that behavior with your animal companion, the first question is, what emotions come up for you, right? So is it frustration? Are you taking it personally? Are you upset? Does it sadden you that your animal companion is acting that way? So first we want to identify the emotion that they're bringing up for us. The second question we want to ask ourselves is where else in our lives do we experience those similar emotions? You know, do these emotions elicit any memories, any past experiences, any broader patterns in your life? So, you know, if I'm frustrated that my dog's barking at me, we talked about maybe it's a broader pattern in our life that we don't feel heard or valued at work. Or maybe, you know, that sadness is something that reminds me of when, you know, my parents would fight and I would hear that yelling, that disregarding of another human being. So if a event pops into your mind, that's something to hold on to. If you realize it's, you know, a pattern that's ongoing at work, we're starting to kind of unfurl the layers of the onion. We're peeling back the layers. The third question is, what is the belief that characterizes this experience or pattern? So if the presenting issue is barking, right, and the emotion that comes up is frustration, and the broader pattern in my life that comes up is, you know what, at work I'm never heard. The belief that might characterize that experience or pattern is that my voice is not worth it, or, you know, I'm to be seen, not heard. You know, a lot of us were told that as a child, right? Children are to be seen, not heard. And so then the last question, the most important one, is, are you ready to change the story? So if I believe that I should be seen but not heard, am I ready to change that? Because sometimes that behooves me, right? If I'm not saying anything, if no one's acknowledging what I'm saying, I'm staying safe and I'm staying small. So maybe subconsciously on some level, I'm propagating that story. But if I decide, you know what, I have something to say, I want to stand up and say something on behalf of the animals, I've set the intention that I will be heard in my authentic truth and that it will be received, then I'm changing the energy behind that story. So those four questions can be used in any given situation with your animal companion, right? Anytime they're doing something, stop, observe. What's the energy? Where do I recognize that energy more broadly? What is behind that energy pattern? And am I ready to change that?
Yeah. I would say that those are the four basic questions that we want to ask just about in every situation,
right?
Regardless of whether it's animals or humans or otherwise. Denise Maj, I want to thank you so much for sharing this time with us. PetPrana.com is your website, and folks can certainly get in touch with you as far as further information about what we've touched upon, even about their own respective furry friends in their homes. And it also, I think, would help us too in terms of understanding sometimes the behavior of others who are other animals who might be running, like those big black dogs that used to chase me on the bicycle. And I did come to understand why they did that. And it had nothing to do with me personally. It had to do with the fact that it was a sort of a magnetic effect of the spinning wheel and the spokes and the pedals moving that they were chasing. That's what they were chasing. And if there was a way for me to distract them from that by, if it was just a bottle of water sprayed in their faces that distracted them, then, you know, that would have been fine too. But before I let you go, first of all, you ever find yourself up here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. I think this would be fabulous to talk more about, and especially maybe even talking about some of the techniques used on different animals, and or for that matter, going even beyond that, to discuss on a future program some of the conditions and the messages that you have received from the animals about these conditions that they have. Because one woman who we had on the program, who is also an intuitive, an animal intuitive, shared with me that, for example, Makushala, she's sort of upset because she didn't plan on this and she doesn't want to disappoint me. And I have to remember that every time I get frustrated with her when I'm trying to put the diaper on or I'm trying to do this or she's messed and this and that and the other thing. That this is the scenario we have, and it's not your fault. You didn't do this on purpose, and so on and so forth. And you're just trying to make it through, just like I am. So I have to keep that in mind. But I think that would be for a good program to follow up on.
Absolutely, and even having people submit questions for live readings or readings beforehand. I do pet intuitive energy readings. And there's a whole slew of things we could explore together. But Richard, thank you so much for having me on the show.
You bet.
And for sharing all your stories and your animal companions with us. And for just helping me amplify this message about a new way forward in working with our animal companions.
And I want to ask you if you had a chance at all to put together the numerological aspects, if it's relevant, in terms of Angus' birth date.
Yes. So Angus's birth date is a 3. So it's really neat because 3 is that magical number, that spark, that, think of all the trinities in nature. And it's the alchemy. It's the number of magic, of alchemy, of things coming together. So he really is a catalyst for you guys in learning all these new way forwards and that, the lessons around 8. He is a catalyst, and that's powerful. 3 and 8 as numbers, that is a very magical little soul that you guys have called into your life.
Very cool. 3 final quick questions. First question is, who is Denise Maj?
A pet intuitive and pet groupie.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to inspire people as the animals have inspired me.
And what is your life's purpose?
To be the voice for the animals, so people see them through the same eyes that they see themselves.
Denise Munch. They are indeed. Denise Munch, thank you so much once again for sharing this time with us, and we do look forward to having you back again. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.